CliffCentral.com.
Ah, yeah, we are live. It is Monday morning. It's already the 13th of June, and we're heading for the middle, the dead center of winter. Yes, the winter solstice. That's happening, I think, on the 21st of June. Supposedly, after that, it should get warmer, but I've learned my lesson over these many years that I have been suffering. That actually comes a lot later. Summer only reappears somewhere. Well, not even summer. Warm weather. The first touch of the spring. If you're lucky, September. That's probably around where it happens. Anyway, we want to hear from you this morning. You can drop us a comment in the comment section of YouTube or Instagram. Twitter or Facebook. And you can tell us what's going on over there. And we also want to hear from you in the emails. So send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com, and tell us what you're up to. Got a bunch of cool stuff coming your way. I mentioned MUPS, Maponyane, and Collectomania later on. By the way, if you have an interesting collection, or there's someone you know who has an interesting collection that you think they might want to tell us about, boast a little bit about. I mean, these are the things that you might have spent years and years collecting. So we want to hear from you. Send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com, so we can put you on and we can let you boast about your awesome collection. I love having Dr. Hanan on because it's such a reality check. He says some stuff sometimes that I just know people are going to hate. You know, there's some people who are going to go, oh, no, you can't say that. That's outrageous. That's not what I believe. That's not how I feel. But it's right. It's coming from a guy who's a professional. He's being paid money by people who he is talking to every single day, you know, patients of his who come to him with serious, serious problems. And this is what he's telling them. And we get it for free on the show. So it's useful to listen and not immediately do what most of us do, including me a lot of the time. And you react with, but I. Not always the best way to react to something like that. It is a chilly morning. Leanne Moll's with us, though. So how are you doing there, Moll? Are you keeping warm? You're on mute. How embarrassing. You're on mute. So embarrassing. We're going to have to start finding you.
I just can't keep
not getting it right. No. I made fires. I made fires yesterday. Just the whole day I had a fire going.
Oh, and I was, men make fire.
I think I'm going to do that today, hey? I'm going to burn through this wood. It's expensive, but I don't see another way of keeping warm and actually getting the work done, because if I don't have a fire in a room, or if I don't have, and I don't like heaters. Heaters, to me, I don't know how much electricity they're using, and I'm very, very scared of using too much of that at the moment. So I think just burning shit is the way to go.
It might be a strange birthday present to receive, but I did get a gas heater, which I'm very excited about.
Okay. All right.
Sean
says, hey, Gareth, how come you go to the studio? How come you go
Maybe how come you don't go to the studio?
Yeah, I'm not going back to the studio for the show. Sorry. You're waking up at what? Then I'll have to be up at 4:30 again every morning and trudge through there. Just what? So what's going to be better? Explain to me, Sean.
Risk your life on the road.
Risk your life.
You know.
Just the price of petrol. What do you mean, Sean? Would you like me to be back in the studio as for what? He says, how come you don't broadcast from the studio? Because I don't see any advantage to it. Most of our guests are going to be joining us online at this stage as well. I mean, there are occasions where I have been into the studio to record interviews, but I don't see the point. I know that it's irritating when people forget to mute or unmute themselves, like Leanne did this morning, but really that's a small price to pay for having to. And you remember how many guests we had? I mean, Leanne, you've been on the show for a long time. You remember how many guests just didn't pitch or were stuck in traffic or overslept or forgot? It's exactly the same as the number of guests who we have technical problems with, right?
Yeah, and people are, you know, COVID changed things. I'm always on the lookout for extra jobs and things like that. And quite frankly, if they want me in the office, then I don't apply.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's a non-negotiable anymore.
I know some people like thrive on being with other people, but we've adapted quite well.
I mean, there's a difference. So the business needs us to be in the office, which is why I still go in two, sometimes three times a week. But the show doesn't. this show can be done from anywhere. And there are lots and lots of people who are starting to see that this is actually a blessing in disguise over the last, 2.5 years that we've been doing this.
Mm-hmm.
We've had just as many really amazing guests. We've had lots and lots of contributors. We've had plenty of fun. We haven't missed a beat. And we haven't missed a show, frankly. So it's been... it's worked out really well. And I mean, even I used to be late sometimes for the show in the mornings. You know, you oversleep occasionally, or there's really bad traffic, or there's an accident on the road, something like that. In this case, the only traffic I have to put up with is my own feet and this puppy who may try and trip me up on the way to the studio.
I was going
to
say.
It's the easiest
tripping
thing.
Tripping over the dog.
Yeah, please. Like, I know that it seems like it's... it's the lazy option. But remember, we started doing this even before the president called for the lockdown, because we thought this is going to be a long-term thing. And it's ended up saving us some money. We get to do all the stuff that we've always done. You get to see inside the house that Leanne's house sitting. You get to see inside my house. It's a lot more personal. and it feels like it's a real connection. And I also think it's such a waste of... like fuel and energy, and like having to be in the office every day for the show is kind of stupid. But for meetings and things, yes, absolutely, I do understand that. And I totally agree, by the way, with Elon Musk, who's saying basically if you don't put in your hours in the office, you may as well look for another job, because he can tell that his staff work better when they're all together in the factories and the offices. So, you know, in some businesses, they've already figured out that there's no way that everybody's on the same level when you work from home. Some people are just not self-motivated.
Yeah, I mean, when you're building cars and rocket ships and transportation devices, it's probably better to be together in person.
Can we please talk about this Justin Bieber full paralysis face thing that he's got going on in half of his face? I mean, what is this? Is this for real? Because I saw headlines of it over the weekend, but I couldn't have been bothered to actually look it up. So has Bieber got some kind of syndrome?
Yep, he does. It all started because he had to postpone his concerts and his entire tour, actually. And I mean, come on, guys, we know what a hard worker he is. It's his life. He lives for this stuff. And I think in order to convey the seriousness of this, he put out a video. And in the video, it's completely clear.
Oh, wow.
It's quite scary, actually. The one side of his face is completely paralyzed. He can't even blink on the one side of his face. So as he's talking in the video, you'll see his one eye only blinks. He can only smile on one side.
Shit.
Even if he flares his nostrils, only one nostril flares. So apparently he's been diagnosed with Ramsay-Hunt syndrome.
Right.
And it comes from a virus that attacked the nerve in his ear, and as a result, his facial nerves.
Wow.
And so he has full paralysis on the one side of his face. And apparently it happens when a case of the shingles, which can often be stress-related or, you know, if you're working too hard, impacts the facial nerve near the ear. It can even cause hearing loss. It's caused by the same virus that causes chickenpox. But apparently quick treatment can reduce the risk of complications. So it's not, I don't think it's going to be a permanent thing.
Wow.
He said, I'm just physically not capable of doing my shows. I'm sorry that you're frustrated. It's pretty serious. I wish this wasn't the case, but obviously my body's telling me that I've got to slow down.
Damn it.
So he's taking some downtime to rest and get himself back to full health.
All right, well, now I feel bad, because I didn't think it was for real. I thought it was like an attention-seeking thing. Because, you know, you sometimes hear these people saying these things, you're not really sure if they mean it or not. And who knows, like Hollywood hasn't done this test before where someone claims to have a problem and they don't. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But how old is he?
A lot of the time.
He's not very old.
No, I think he's in his 30s, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean he's a young guy. This is really bad news, really bad news for him and for all of his fans. Is he still coming to South Africa to do his concerts?
I'm not sure. This article doesn't point to that at all.
All right.
He is postponing the tour was originally slated to kick off in 2020, but it was first delayed because of COVID to 2021, and then again because of COVID to 2022. So fans have been like really frustrated by not being able to see him, and then this happened.
But can you imagine how that must feel? You wake up one day and like half your face doesn't work. Awful.
No, it's terrible. I mean, he can't even form his words completely properly.
Shame, man. That's devastating. Oh, my God. Mm. You know, we were all, just a couple of years ago, including me, we were all saying, oh, what a life this guy must have. You know, to be so young and so successful and so wealthy and to have so many people all over the world who just absolutely adore you. It must be like the most perfect existence. And then something like this happens and you go, you know what? I'd rather have my level of happiness, my level of success, my level of wealth than have half my face not work like poor Justin Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be so grateful for what you do have.
See, he's 28, by the way.
Oh, my God. Oh, imagine 28 years old now. You have to put up with this for the rest of your life. Is there a cure?
Yes. So they can treat him, and they can also – he's doing facial exercises and a lot of like physio that goes into it as well, and rehabilitation.
Yeah.
There are a number of other syndromes that cause this. There's Bell's palsy, which can happen to people, and it's not always permanent.
Chilako says he is handling it like a champ, though. I won't lie. I was also a little sus about the post because of the crazy filters out there lately. Yeah. You know, Carl says, can't they just mic him up on the other side of his face?
Oh, my God, guys.
Come on.
Please.
You know what? This is we joke about these things. Are you kidding?
No, we do. We do.
We're not going to take everything super seriously. But I do feel sorry for the guy. I really do. This is pure. This is just horrible, horrible stroke of luck. That's all it is. You don't earn this by like doing tons of drugs or by, putting yourself through really unhealthy lifestyle choices. This is just pure unluckiness. Am I right?
Mm.
It's not something he.
No, absolutely. He
no one deserves this.
He more than anyone would want to be touring and performing. That's what he loves to do. So, I mean, he has to deal with that disappointment too. And then. The millions that he would have earned as well.
Right.
I mean, when something like this happens to us, we kind of tell our family and our colleagues and take some time off. But for him, it means massive losses.
All right. Well, I'm very sorry for him. And, all I can say is it's just that's a terrible, devastating blow to him. And he's just newly married. And, you know, I don't know. It's just a horrible situation for this poor guy. Younger than 30 years old, and this is what he's going to deal with. Hey, I know that there are people with real problems in the world, but this is a real problem for Justin Bieber. I guarantee you he woke up, 2 months ago, and he was like, everything's great. My life is fun. I'm enjoying being me. Now, look at what he has to put up with. Sometimes the universe just says, sit the fuck down, says Ruth. Maybe, hey. Maybe that's what it is. TP said, I had Bell's just after giving birth. Double whammy. Oof.
Sure.
Yeah. You can't say stroke of luck. Yeah, all right, all right. I know. Because it's a stroke. Yeah, okay. Great. Thank you, Carl. We can always rely on you for being the most insensitive person, even more than me.
Most PC.
Yeah. When people say, oh, you're so insensitive, I'm like, have you heard this guy who listens to our show called Carl? He's the worst. All right. I want to talk about this because it kind of leads into collectomania. For this morning, and it's a really interesting list. The 21 most expensive hobbies in the world. Now, I'm sure that you're already starting to think, well, you know, I mean, a friend of mine just recently, his wife decided she likes riding horses, or she's always been a rider, but now she wants her own horse. So he just, you could see the panic on his face when he was telling us the story, because he was like, this is going to cost me. And it really is one of the most expensive things. And you could call it a hobby or a sport or an athletic pursuit or whatever. But, I mean, having a horse is a really expensive business. And that was the first one that popped into my mind when I heard that there's a list of 21 of these things. Obviously, then you get the things that are the most expensive, like art collecting, I would imagine, can become a very expensive thing if you're on, if you're onto that wicket, if that's what you like to collect. But there are obviously things that I haven't thought about. We spoke about cameras not so long ago. Somebody said it was with Stival Mark, actually, on Friday. He and Ben were talking about these lenses that they have to get for their cameras, which can cost as much as a house for one lens. So I reckon photography's on there too. But why don't you give us the complete list? Here we are, the list of the most expensive hobbies in the world, so that everybody who isn't collecting can start doing it now. Because obviously you've got all this money lying around. Everybody's super rich in the world. There's no such thing as expensive petrol. We don't have to pay for expensive electricity. The economy's doing great, so you need to spend money. So here are some hobbies.
So to start off with, the average person in America spends around $200 a month on their hobbies.
Okay.
But that obviously doesn't take into account people who have expensive hobbies. You're right. Horse riding is right up there. The most expensive hobby at the top of the list is playing polo.
Yes.
The equipment, obviously the horse, learning how to play polo. And through the generations, it's one of the oldest team sports in the world. It dates back to ancient Persia, and it's always been associated with luxury and wealth. So we know.
So with polo, you have to have more than one pony, so you have to actually have a couple of them. I think most really serious polo players have at least four, because you might swap them out during a game. And those four all need stabling. They all need exercise. They all need food. They all need
medical
treatment. It becomes hugely expensive. So, yes, polo isn't so much a sport as it is a rich person's hobby. That's for sure. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm putting this down. I'm writing my own list. Go. I'm adding to it. Looking for things that I can start doing that cost an arm and a leg. Go.
So, obviously, the next one on the list is collecting art.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to start dealing in art, it's just going to be off-the-wall expensive.
Yeah.
And,
on the wall
expensive. How far will you go? On the
wall. Sorry.
Yes, exactly. Well done. I'm sorry, I had to close this tab because it was playing music, but I've reopened it now.
All right.
So we've got playing polo, we've got art collecting, obviously, and next on the list is yachting.
Oh, yeah, okay. Now we're in the big money. Jesus.
You obviously need a large boat as well as a crew to maintain it.
Even if you have a small boat.
Yeah.
I mean, no such thing as a cheap one. This is very, exactly. Very hectic stuff. Okay.
That runs into millions to maintain and operate and buy. Then we've got skydiving, which is also pretty expensive.
Yep. Leanne, something's gone wrong. Something's gone wrong with your sound. Sorry, I'm hearing myself, and then it's gone all scratchy. Now you're helping the people who argue that we should be in the studio, because this is their argument. So just unmute your mic and let's carry on. Hopefully it's sorted. Yep. Can't hear you.
So sorry.
There we go.
So sorry. Having really terrible issues this morning. And yeah, it's ironic. So we've got then yachting. I've again lost this tab. Okay, skydiving. We've now established that you obviously need to have to pay, and especially fuel, for an aeroplane ride to get you up there. And all the kit and everything that has to be tested all the time. You can't just keep the same old kit for years and years without having it tested. Wine collecting is up there.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why I don't collect it. I just drink it, because otherwise it's too expensive.
Well, somebody threw this one in. I don't know if it's on your list, but it makes perfect sense that it should be. all these billionaires who are trying to get into space. So Carlos says, what about space exploration like Bezos, Branson, and Musk? You need to have billions, and you need to be willing to lose lots and lots of money in order to just get yourself into the stratosphere to maybe go around the Earth once. And this is what a lot of super, super wealthy people are doing. So maybe they're finding new ways to spend money, developing new hobbies, just so rich people can like try and outperform each other.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's go-karting on the list, and I mean, that's most Formula One drivers start out doing go-kart racing from like the age of six.
Okay.
A go-kart costs around $8,000. The gear is about $1,000. The total cost of a year's go-kart racing is around $11,000.
Sure.
And that's a lot for a kid.
Damn right.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Downhill skiing, obviously, because you need to travel there and pay for accommodation.
Yep.
Again, equipment, lessons. There's also scuba diving, which is expensive.
Right.
The gear exceeds thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you obviously need to travel to get there unless you're lucky enough to live nearby. Horseback riding, as you mentioned, is there. But, you know, again, you can have one horse, not as expensive as polo. And then, you know, from that stems out dressage, eventing, show jumping, even horse racing.
Okay.
Collecting cars is obviously
An
expensive thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think so. Like Jay Leno has this warehouse full of cars. Apparently, and I'm only saying Jay Leno because he's the most famous person I can think of, but there are probably bigger car collectors in the world. I know Jerry Seinfeld also collects cars. But Jay Leno has this warehouse in L.A. where he keeps most of his cars. I mean, if he drove a different car every day, he would not run out of cars in a year. That's how many he has, which is kind of crazy, right?
There's a show at the moment. I can't remember the title, but it's about the wealth in Beverly Hills.
Oof.
And he's actually seen leading one of these parades that they do through Beverly Hills.
Really?
Where everyone's in their fancy cars doing a slow drive-by.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of money to play with. Flying a plane is expensive, you know, especially flying school.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to buy your own plane.
Yes.
And it takes a long time to become proficient as well. Playing golf, now we're heading to something that we might be more familiar with, can be expensive to get into, and you've got your membership fees, greens fees.
Yeah, but I mean, that's way down the list. You know, I can see a lot of wives going, I knew it. I knew golf would be on there. It's very expensive. But it's your most expensive thing in golf is really your drinks afterwards. I mean, let's be fair about that, right? I don't think that there's much.
Your pims in the club, darling.
Yeah, and somehow I don't think that golf is in the same category as yachting or polo or any of that stuff. Come on. Am I wrong?
I mean, we are moving down the list, so.
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
Even stamp collecting's on here. Stamps. You know, to the casual person, it doesn't cost anything because you're just, you know, collecting old envelopes.
All right.
But some of the most sought-after stamps can actually sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on their condition.
Okay. All right.
Mountain climbing's up there.
Yeah, but why? Mountain... You don't have to book a spot on the mountain.
Equipment.
What? Shoes?
No, man. Ropes, helmets, harnesses.
Oh, hang on. You're talking about the comp. I thought you just meant like hiking up a mountain. You're talking about the really. You know what? What do you need if you're going to do proper mountain climbing? Crampons. No, really, that's a thing. You need crampons.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. You need crampons. You need professional instruction.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hot air ballooning is quite expensive.
Very good.
And then we've got RC planes.
What?
That's remote control planes.
Oh, I
wasn't
okay.
aware of that.
All right. Yeah. But that's always been a thing. I remember there used to be a bunch of these people. They're probably still around. And they had their own little airstrips where they would land their remote control planes, and they'd fly together.
Yeah.
Fly in formation.
You actually pay for Yeah, you pay for memberships at local model flying clubs.
Right.
You've got to pay to use their runway. You even can use their flight instructors.
Correct.
There's your equipment.
It's a very big thing, this remote control plane thing. I don't understand it. Again, it must be expensive because you have to buy all these little parts. You have to build and assemble the thing yourself. It's complicated stuff.
Yeah.
You're not, you can't just go into it. And listen, I suppose drone flying could also be a hobby that a lot of people are into at the moment. Because, you get very expensive drones. You get the kind of standard commercial ones. But it costs you money because you crash. And then you have to replace parts.
Especially if it's loaded with a camera as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
High stakes poker is on the list. But hopefully you'll be, if you're that good a player, hopefully you're earning more money than you're losing.
Mm. A lot of people fancy themselves to be high-stakes poker players, and then they're actually just high-stakes poker losers. That's what I think.
And remember as well that the minimum bet is typically set at around $100. So just to play, you need over 2,000 rand, you know.
Tracy says if you climb Everest, you need to pay your Sherpa. And then Carl says mountain climbing is only expensive if you fall off the mountain. Jean says more expensive remote control racing is cuck expensive. My buddy and his dad did it. Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh, except with like cars and things on the ground.
And the other one that that David brings up is horse racing. There's a reason it's called the sport of kings. Yeah, if you actually breed and you have your own horses that race, that's hugely expensive.
Yeah. We've got ballroom dancing on here.
Oh, yeah.
Again, there's like these fees that you've got to pay and instructors, et cetera.
But that's near the bottom
collecting
of the list, right? That's not very, very
expensive. This is nearing the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, collecting sneakers, again, depends because we've spoken to one or two people who collect sneakers in Collectomania, and some of them have substantial collections, like in rooms where they're all on display. And those are serious, serious ones. I've got a sneaker obsession, but I'm not a collector. I mean, I can fit all of my sneakers into probably the top half of one cupboard, and that'll be it. It's still a lot, but I'm not as serious a collector as some people are. All right, it is time for us to, speaking of collections, to bring on our special guest for the morning, and he's someone we haven't spoken to for a long time. I'm very happy to see he is around and ready to talk to us and connect with us again. His name is Mups Maponya. How are you, Mups?
Hello, hello. How are you doing, guys?
Good, dude. It's so nice to see you. How have you been? Been a long time.
I've been so good. Sorry if I sound like it's 7:30 in the morning. It's because it's 7:30 in the morning. It's been a while, man. It's been a really long time, but I'm doing really good. Really, really lucky that things have been going well. And work is on the up, traveling quite a great deal, and just been lucky that things have been coming through.
Well, in case you do not know and you've been living under a rock, Mups Maponyane is a TV presenter, model, actor, style icon, designer, businessman, philanthropist. He's making waves locally and internationally. But what you might not know about him is that he also collects hats and caps. You are a hat and cap man, and you have a huge collection, I'm told. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm just a full-on headwear man. I mean, I've got lots of different kinds of hats, be it kind of like the formal Panamas, fedoras, Hamburg hats, jersey hats, pits, fezzes, whatever you can pretty much imagine. I've probably got a hat for that. Caps and even a whole bunch of beanies. I just love headwear. And what's funny about that, and Gareth, you know, people always think people who wear a lot of hats have got no hair. The funniest thing is that people never see my hair, and they're pretty sure I've got a massive balding patch or something happening there, or I just am like finished underneath. But, you know, There's a lot of hair.
You have the hair, dude. Here. No, you got hair. You got good hair. Listen, it is interesting, though, that hats used to be a massive, massive thing. And over the years, they've become less and less of a thing. I mean, you talk about hats like, you know, Homburgs or fedoras or Panama hats.
Yeah.
Everyone on earth used to wear these things. They were considered
absolutely.
You weren't dressed properly if you didn't go out without a hat on. And these days, obviously, a lot of people wear, you know, baseball caps and all the rest of it. But really, hats are not considered essential parts of the uniform. So a lot of people, I don't wear hats at all. I'm not a hat person. I'm the opposite of you. But that's maybe just because I've never found the right hat.
I mean, it could be because of the never found the right hat, but I also feel like you probably grew up with everyone, you know, complimenting you on your luscious locks, and you're just like, I'm probably just never going to wear a hat then, because then you keep showing these.
I think, I do believe I'd make a very, very ugly bald person, so that's part of it. But I've never, you know, I've never put on a hat and thought I looked better. You know, you sometimes put on sunglasses and you think, oh, these sunglasses make me look better, right?
Yeah.
That's never happened to me with a hat.
In my case, it's quite interesting because I think people try and placate me and say that it's, you know, it's not the case, but I've got a massive head. And for some reason, having a massive head has given me a hat head. So whatever hat I put on seems to always suit me. Like, it always works out. And I get hats made for me. And it still blows my mind that you would place more things on a massive structure and actually compliment it. So it actually has been something that I've loved for years. And I'm quite lucky. I actually think of what you were saying right now about how it used to be a thing back in the day, and that's how I got influenced into loving hats. So my grandfather was one of the most stylish people I knew. He always wore his Sunday best no matter what. He had that Sapphire Town, you know, that Sapphire Town Township swag all the time. Wow. You know, just going to the shops, leaving the home, he'd put on his suit, everything, three-piece, whatever it is, put on his hat to complement everything, and then just walk out, get the milk, get the bread, come back, you know, and then take everything off again. And he had, you know, he had tons of friends who did tailoring and, you know, would share their hat collections, and they'd do it together. And I just always loved how it complemented the look. You know, I feel the same way you kind of described it earlier, where if I leave the house, I feel like just adding a hat adds that bit of personality. And I always wear the hat that is how I'm feeling, you know, that's aligned with how I'm feeling in that moment. And it allows me to be able to switch between characters, switch between moods, switch between what my focus might be for the day. And it seems ridiculous, but for me, it's just like, it gives me what I'm trying to convey for the day, or what I'm trying to really get out there and the presence I'm trying to have for the day. And it's quite fun for me, especially as a man who, I can't avoid the cliche, as a man who just generally in life wears many hats. It's quite cool to be able to switch up in different kinds of ways. And it's fun.
I love this, dude. And what you were talking about your grandfather, you know, with respect to him.
Gareth, I know you're talking about. I'm taking you for a walk.
Okay.
I just want to show you something before you speak about my grandfather. I've got a little hat wall in my room.
Okay, so I just want to explain.
Which I think you might appreciate.
I want to explain to everybody who's listening and not watching, because there are many more people who listen to the podcast. This is the most extraordinary hat wall. He's basically got a whole lot of hooks on the wall, and he's got all these beautiful hats, just all colors, just every style. There are some of these hats which, I mean, there are even some of them that are just piled up on the ground next to the hat collection on the wall. Mops, how many hats?
Sorry about the way the sun is coming through.
No. How many hats do you think you have?
I reckon I've got about maybe like 290 odd of hats.
If
you include the caps as well,
sure.
It's over the 300 mark. So, I reckon I've got a problem.
I just want to go back to you were talking about your grandfather, and you know, there were these stylish people like two generations back who just, they never compromised. It didn't matter whether they had money or they didn't. Didn't matter whether they grew up in a rich neighborhood or a poor one. They did not compromise on their outfit. They made sure that they always looked amazing, men and women. You know, there are a couple of ladies on Thursday. I went to the British High Commission, and there are a couple of ladies there wearing hats, and it just completes the outfit. And hearing you describe your grandfather, the fact that he would never leave, and there was a whole etiquette to hats. You know, you kind of took your hat off when you greeted someone. There's a whole way of behavior that we've sort of lost. I don't think we have the appreciation for headwear that we used to have. I don't think people understand how you know, there's a language that goes with this stuff.
And I also don't think people understand how much people notice that level of behavior. In other words, when I'm wearing a hat, and I think it's because, you know, of perhaps the kind of traditional school I would have gone to, or because of how my grandfather always was, or his, you know, their friends in the township. Mm. Whenever I am wearing a hat, one thing I always do, if I do meet someone, I'll always tip my hat and shake their hand, and right. or I'll take my hat off. And people are always just like, oh, geez, people still do that. That's so lovely, you know. Right. It seems like such an old-fashioned thing, but it's just such a signifier of respect we can all recognize, you know. Mm. And I think I'm such a purist in many ways that I've always loved to keep those kinds of things that will evoke different feelings in people, and keep a certain level of things associated to the, you know, the old school suave male or something, you know, just sure. they always had fun with it. There was always a flair that they did everything with. It wasn't just because it wasn't just generic. You know, if I think of personalities, some of my favorite friends are autistic, and I say they're my favorite and some of my best friends because as kind of neurotypical people, we just have gotten into the very generic way of just like, hi, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine, cool. Yeah, and then you move on. My neurodivergent friends who are autistic, you ask them how they are, and they'll just be blatantly honest. Like, they're just curious about how they are. And sure, you know, people might interpret that as being burdensome, but I've got a friend who sometimes I'll call him, I'll say, hey, man, how are you doing? He's like, yeah, well, I'm feeling pretty pathetic about half of my day and feeling a bit useless, but everything's seeming like it's picking up and a little bit more positive today. So I'm looking forward to seeing if I can get more positive, you know, factors in my life for the rest of the day.
Oh,
and it's
wow.
just like, it's so refreshing to like just say it as it is and then just keep it moving. Great. I mean, I just don't like the generic because where's the feeling in that? Where's the personality in that? Where's the individual in that? And I think individualism is so big to me because, you know, another thing just to quickly divert, I grew up with a severe stutter and people don't even pay attention to you if you have any speech impediment or anything that is considered not to be normal. And so I was always put aside, always never kind of considered. I was always kind of voiceless. And
if only we found you because we used to have the speech impediment Olympics on my show, and I used to specially give people who had speech impediments an opportunity to read poetry. But of course, you were too young at that stage, so you missed that opportunity. Sorry about that.
I mean, would it be the perfect time as well? While are we?
All right, I want to show off a few pictures of you here. So just describe what's going on. Is that a traditional Panama hat? But it seems to have like a thing.
Yes.
That is a Panama hat. All right. So
that's a traditional Panama.
Funny thing about
Panama hats. That's a traditional
Panama hat. They're actually made in Ecuador.
Yeah, if I had to. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I wear that sometimes when I'm feeling like I don't know, it adds a little bit of, I guess, feeling of I don't know, it just makes you feel good, feeling of grandeur, like I'm just about to make a massive deal flying over Colombia. All right, what's the next hat?
I like that. You could say the Panama hat gives you a sense of panache, so we stick to the panache.
Exactly. I see what you did there. Very nice.
Now, what do you call a hat like that?
That's a fez.
Is that a fez? Okay, beautiful.
That's a fez, yeah. So that's a style of fez that's just been kind of slightly modified by Simon & Mary. So that's another thing. I'd say 90% of my hats are from Simon & Mary, which is a local hat brand. Mm-hmm. Local milliners that make incredible, incredible hats. And that's quite a unique one in that kind of deep, deep yellow. Beautiful. and I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's magnificent. And those,
I think the origins of that would be Morocco, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. They used to wear those red ones with the tassel on the top in Morocco.
Yes, exactly.
But these are definitely stylized. Like they're not as high, and they seem to. Mm. It's almost like a brimless hat, really. That's kind of what it is. It's beautiful. It looks good. Looks good on you. Then, I mean, you are a model, so everything looks good on you. Here's you with a baseball cap on. Anything fancy going on? Is it hard to find a good baseball cap? Because some of them have got terrible like logos and writing on the front, and some of them are awful colors. I mean, are you very particular about what kinds you actually buy?
Yeah, I'm very particular. It has to fit on my head a certain way. It can't be kind of over embellished. Some of the logos are terrible. They don't quite work out. But sometimes it can be really cool. Sometimes it goes with a little bit of bias. I'm a big basketball fan, so I love a great like Lakers cap and love that kind of LA motif across some of my hats. But otherwise, no. As long as it fits really well, you can usually get away with it.
Yeah, I think if you're going to have a baseball cap, you better have a New York Yankees one, you know, with that
Absolutely.
New York logo on the front. That's always a good one to have. I saw one when I first went to New York, and I had to buy it. There are also those.
Yeah.
A lot of people like the ones where you can identify a certain sports team. But for you, being a bit of a fashion icon, you have to also have baseball caps and other hats that are multifunction. In other words, if the logo is too big or the logo is too prominent, you can't wear it with too many outfits because then people only see the cap and it kind of doesn't blend in with the rest of what you're doing, right?
It takes away completely from it. Exactly that. Yeah. So it's important that you also, it's important that I also kind of have hats that I can wear with different things, and it will just kind of complement and not be the actual show. You know, it's not the actual moment.
All right.
So the hat wearing you as opposed to you wearing the hat.
I think
what's also, just to get back to your point about your neurodivergent friends, you know, we know that there can be difficulties in reading facial expressions and especially micro facial expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And there is so much communication through a hat. You know, there is the tipping of the hat for respect. There's the taking off of the hat to show sympathy, you know, when you mm-hmm. hear bad news or something like that. If you look at dancers on stage and how they use their hats, to convey certain emotions, it's so true, and I honestly hadn't thought about it until you brought it up.
I think that's what I love about it. I think it forces people to just for a moment just think, you know, just that little gesture of taking off the hat or tipping the hat or something. It just kind of adds that little smile and that little quirk and that little thought of, oh, that's actually quite a lovely thing that we used to do quite a bit. And
throwing it into the air in celebration, that sort of thing.
So,
Maps, the difficult thing about this and what makes your collection different to some of the other ones that we've had on the show is that you actually wear yours. But are there certain hats that you are loath to put on because you're just a bit nervous that they might get damaged, you might forget them somewhere, or are they all there for use and you're not going to be very precious about any of them? Are there any of them that cost you so much money that you won't wear them?
So you were speaking earlier about sneaker collectors, and I also collect a bunch of sneakers, but I also just don't see the point in doing so if you're not going to wear them.
Absolutely.
And I've got a lot of hats. I mean, just specifically with sneakers, I'm sure you've seen a lot of those images of how people don't wear them and they try and collect them and hold on to them for years. And the problem with sneakers is that you need the fibers in the sole to keep moving so that they don't break down. And so many sneakers have been found that were collected over like 5 years, 10 years, and the sole has just fallen apart because they weren't utilized enough, and those fibers weren't active in movement. So with hats as well, I've got lots of like beautifully specially made hats that I love, mm-hmm. but what's the point if I'm not going to be able to enjoy them? You know, what's the point if I'm not going to be able to wear them as often as possible? And if something happens to them, I mean, obviously it's sad and it sucks and it's unfortunate, but then so be it. But I love being able to travel as well and collect hats. Like whenever I'm in the UK, it's very cliche, but whenever I'm in the UK, that's where I get all my newspaper boy hats, you know, those kind of poor boy hats they call, right. Kind of those Oliver Twist hats, because they make the best tweed. And so it's the best place to go and buy a whole bunch of those really high quality tweed hats, kind of like the Peaky Blinders. And so I only get those from there. And here we make amazing hats, so it's always a Simon and Mary hats. And if I'm in Nigeria, I get a lot of those Igbo culture cheap hats, which are just awesome as well. And I love wearing those, and they accentuate whatever I'm wearing. And I think it's just important to wear them as much as possible.
Yeah, I love that you do put them to use, because there's something about a collection that just sits in a cupboard that makes it kind of boring and staid and, you know, uninteresting. Yeah. Do you have any things that you still desperately want to add to the collection? Because you do get to travel a lot, which helps. Have you ever seen a hat and thought, "Ooh, I want that," and just you didn't have enough money at the time to buy it, or yeah, it was something that was maybe there was only one of and you didn't think to get it?
I actually recently got a specific one that was made for me, and now is going to be put in production. But I've always wanted to get it made somehow, and it was made by Matosa, and they did some really really cool stuff with it. Can I quickly go grab it?
Sure, let's take a look at that. I'm just putting up a picture on the screen for those people listening on the podcast. You could see a bunch of his hats in the background on his hat wall, and they really are like just a fortune of these things.
So cool.
You have to have confidence to pull off a hat. It's not something everybody can wear with confidence. You know, a lot of people wear them and they look stupid, like me. I look like a goofy fuck. But I think
I've always battled as well.
Do you?
And I remember there was a show called Blossom growing up.
Oh, yeah.
And it was actually, I can't remember her name now, but she was in The Big Bang Theory. She was Sheldon's wife, who's actually a neuroscientist in real life as well.
Wow.
She was the star of Blossom growing up, and she always had hats. And that kind of kicked off a trend when I was sort of preteen. And I would have loved to have worn a hat. But ever since then, after trying one on, I was like, I'm never going to wear a hat in my life.
It's not for everybody. Some people just don't they don't look good in them. But Maps is going to go and fetch one of his favorite ones. I've got like a few baseball hat caps, but I don't even think they look good on me. So I'm always a bit nervous about wearing them, because I feel like I look dumb. I think it's just it's not a Gareth thing. Maybe I'm missing out.
I haven't seen you in many hats.
No, but you know what? It's useful to have them, especially when the sun is bright in the middle of summer and you're outdoors.
Yeah,
I mean, frankly, even in winter, it protects your face from the sun. I mean, there are lots of sensible reasons to wear them that have nothing to do with fashion at all. So you know, if you talk to me on a good day about that kind of stuff, then it makes sense to me. Like you should be wearing a hat if you're going out into the midday sun in a hot country like South Africa. You protect your skin, you protect your eyes. It's a very sensible thing to do. I bought a pretty nice hat in France when I was there the last time, 2019, which I carry around, but it's been a bit damaged when you put it in your luggage. And do you carry hat boxes around, Mups? I mean, because you know, women who have very fancy hats, they have all their hats in boxes in the top of their cupboard.
So if I'm going to be traveling with a lot of hats, I'll have a hat box, and obviously it can be a bit of a mission to travel with one. But it's better that than actually damaging the hats.
Sure.
Or there's a specific way I actually pack my hats. So for example, I would have, you know, something I would have had to figure out so that I don't keep having the issue of damaging them. If I'm taking hats, there's a whole bunch I'm going to show you now, but if I'm taking a Panama, for example, and a few other hats, I'll put my Panama in my bag upside down, pack a whole bunch of clothing around it here so it keeps this structure good, and then it can't get flattened on the bottom, so to speak, and then I'll kind of pack things inside the Panama to also maintain its shape so it never actually gets squashed.
Smart.
So you think of little tricks and ways, and I've traveled with this everywhere, and it's maintained the, you know, really good shape and form.
Great.
So this is a little Panama from Simon & Mary, two different kinds of Panamas. That's a four-dimpled Panama over there, and then that's this kind of Panama with almost like a almost like a cowboy structure. This, for example, is a cowboy hat.
Yeah, look at that with the sides all curled up.
Exactly. Then it's a fun little color as well.
That's beautiful.
So it makes it quite interesting. It changes everything altogether. This is a jersey hat.
That's lovely. Is that sort of a felt?
Yes, this is a felt. Yeah, this is a felt fabric.
So you know something interesting? You know where the term "mad as a hatter" comes from?
I actually used to know this. What is it again? Sorry.
So in the old days, milliners who make hats used to work with mercury salts, and mercury is a very toxic chemical. So what they would do is they'd breathe in mercury vapor over the course of their lives, and then at some point, most of them would lose their minds because mercury is so deadly and so toxic. Once it gets into your system, you can't get it out. So mad as a hatter literally meant that the people who made the hats went crazy from the mercury.
Yeah, yeah. I remember reading that story because I always wanted to know what it is. Milliners, what they have to go through to create the hats, obviously make them differently now.
Sure.
It kind of actually made me appreciate them more because even though they got all mad, they still loved it and still made even more hats. This is a pork pie, if I'm not mistaken.
Now that almost...
I'll call it porky.
That's lovely. It's got is that a feather in it?
The feather in it,
You know, is that almost like the ones? What does Becky Taylor wear? Does he wear? Is that a fedora or is it one of those?
So he wears a fedora with a feather in it. Yes,
he looks like a gangster.
Yeah, he totally does. Proper American gangster vibes. Yeah.
Oh man!
And then this is a military fez.
Oh, that's lovely. That's fantastic. It almost looks like those ones that, like, Brezhnev used to wear in the Soviet Union in the 1950s.
Exactly. And then the one I was saying that I've been wanting to kind of get made that has a little bit more of an African flair that Matosa got made for me and now are going to be putting to production is a kind of locally made Panama, which is really, like, for me, reminiscent of, like, South African Sapphire Township. With a little bit more of a pop. I just love...
It's got such beautiful, bright, contrasting colors on it. That's what I think is so magic.
Yeah.
And really, that would be unique to us in South Africa. I don't think you'd be able to buy any of those anywhere else. And I think that's a terrific
idea.
No,
you won't get this anywhere.
Listen, there's big money in hats. I mean, people like Philip Treacy, who does a lot of the very fancy women's hats. He's probably the world's most famous milliner. That guy is well into the hundreds of millions of pounds, and he'll charge for a hat without being shy. He'll charge, you know, a couple of thousand pounds for a hat. It's quite something.
Yeah, I mean, hats can go, especially for women, because they get all those fancy hats for all the derby races and whatever it might be, funerals, as you know, too. And they can go even for like a tiny little one that's been embellished in some kind of way and that's made designer can go way north of, you know, the tens of thousands of rands. It's quite wild how internationally those are really, really, really appreciated as a must have quality item. And I'm sure you've seen the love for hats here where you kind of, in the township especially, a lot of funerals you would ever go to, you'll see all the women will have a whole bunch of differently made hats, black hats that are made for that moment. And you'll also see we've got amazing hat designers. Anita Ferreira, who's an incredible hat designer. Mm. She's made, you know, lots of incredibly embellished hats. Crystal Birch, one of our best milliners in South Africa as well. She makes fantastic hats. And then, of course, I mentioned Simon and Mary. And those three, I'd say, would be the top here. And their hats, I'd say, can... I don't think go more than like 5,000. I mean, I can be corrected on that, but on average, I know Simon and Mary hat, because I'm always buying them, are about maybe 1,500 plus. And I'm also really lucky that I've got a relationship with them too, where they'll make me special hats and you know, they'll gift them to me too, because they just love me to keep wearing their hats.
Well, Gary's saying this is the coolest collection yet. And we've had we've had some pretty cool collections on here, so that's high praise. Therence says, the hat collection is so cool, I love it. Tracy says, very British to wear pillbox hats to weddings and the races. And Therence also says, my late mom had such a cool church hat collection. I donated it to charity.
Oh, wow.
Now I'm feeling nostalgic.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Listen, dude, it's so nice to hear you talking about something like this, because usually when we talk to you, it's about all kinds of other stuff. But this is like a passion of yours. Do you have enough space in your house, or are you going to have to build another hat room?
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because so there's two things I collect a lot of: hats. I'm not going to include clothes, because I mean that's just my line of work, clothes and shoes. Hats and art. And I really love my space being filled with hats and being able to have enough of a space for them. Otherwise, they can get damaged from like stacking. You might have seen a couple were like stacked, and they can get a little bit warped there. And I hate that, because then what I'll do is go back to the milliner and have to get them reshaped. And because of the damage it's also causing, and because I'm also just running out of space in general for just general living, I'm actually moving to an apartment that's double the size of my apartment, so everything has more space. And I think I'll have two or three hat walls in that one.
Awesome.
And have a lot more of my personality coming through.
Dude, it's so nice to see you again, and I'm sorry it's taken us so long to catch up with you. But at least we found a good excuse to talk to you about something that you really care about. And what a collection. You are definitely the best person to be pulling off a collection of hats like this. And it's delightful to have you let us into your house and into your life and into your hat collection. It's really, really, really very special.
I really, really appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me, guys. And it's always fun to be on the show. And it's been a while, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Definitely. Nice to see you, Mups.
Nice to see you too.
Doffing his cap to us. I like that. Thank you. Mups Maponyani, what a great guy. So good to see him.
Yeah.
And so good to kind of share in something he cares about. I could see you were getting quite excited about the hat collection. Are you a bit of a hat person?
No, like I say, I don't really wear them. I wear them for function, you know, so if I'm in the sun or if I'm in the freezing cold, then I will.
Do you have beanies?
No, it's really, I do for when I travel to France, darling, in the winter.
Oh, they're just so sorry. Oh,
and you know, my summer hats for when I go to the Algarve in summer.
It must be so tough being you with all those hats for different seasons. All right, well, listen, that's all we got time for this morning, but we will see you tomorrow bright and early at 6 o'clock. Have an excellent day and be good. If you're not, well, tell us about it. Send us an email. Cheers, everybody.
Cliffcentral.com.